It's 16 minutes after 11 o'clock at the Saturday Light Brigade. Thank you for being here along with us. I see a lot of kids that are out here in the Children's Museum playing, which is terrific. And if you want to come in, we'll open our doors in a little bit if you want to come in and say hello. So last night at Bottle Brush, a great performance, I understand, from Ellen Cherry. And Dennis McCurdy was telling me that the place was so full they had to, you know, move around furniture and make more room. And I'm not surprised based on what I've listened to online and based on even the sound check for the last few moments. She's from Baltimore, and she's had a song nominated for an Emmy and has done some other television work. We'll talk with her about that and more throughout the hour, but let's welcome Ellen Cherry.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm going to start with a song called 1933 to California.
Children and you work my hands, and every line that I
What a nice
thank you.
Song. When did you start playing? When you were growing up? Or
Actually, I started playing music. I took piano lessons as a child, and then I studied the cello for about 6 or 8 years when I was in high school and college, and left it because I picked up the guitar when I was about 20, 21, and it's so much more portable than piano and cello. So
cello, I don't know exactly what I mean when I say this, but cello is sort of a songwriter's instrument. I know a lot of songwriters that either still play cello occasionally or started on cello and moved, and I think it's so evocative of the human voice.
Exactly, that I was just going to say. It's very. So I think the oboe has a similar quality too. So the oboe and the cello, they're very melodic instruments. They're used melodically in music, and they are very, very close to the human voice. And so I think that's why a lot of us choose that.
Yeah. Did you write songs before migrating to guitar?
I sang songs, and I wrote poetry, but I didn't really write songs. I don't think that they weren't really ready to be born yet until I picked up the guitar.
And so when you say you sang... Were you singing other people's songs, or were you singing your poetry, but you just don't think they were crafted enough to graduate?
I definitely was an interpreter at that point. I was singing other people's songs, and not really. I was writing my own poetry, but not necessarily singing it yet. And I think until the guitar came to my hands, I wasn't ready to. This is the ultimate for me, one of my favorite accompaniment instruments, because it just feels so natural to me to play it. And now that I've just finished recording this piano album, it's a new experience, because even though I had experience on the piano before, it's a different physical motion, obviously, than playing the guitar. And so it feels so strange, and it's good. I'm out of my element a little bit, and it's nice to be a little bit nervous, extra nervous and scared on stage. it's like taking risks constantly.
I forget. I was talking to somebody, we were talking about perfectionism, actually married to Darrow, a teacher in Monongahela in the Mon River Valley here. Yesterday we were talking about excess perfectionism or perfectionism in general, and I said, you know, if this weekly radio program was recorded instead of live, I don't think I could do it because it would take... I mean, you'd be redoing and redoing and redoing, and you do seem like a very natural live performer, and that you like performing live. Some people don't.
I love both mediums, although they are completely different beasts altogether. And as all creative people know, we tend to be perfectionists. Even if you feel like you aren't a perfectionist, you are. You want it to be the absolute best thing that you can be giving to the audience, because you want a very... It's not that you want a specific reaction, it's just that you want to present to them the best representation of that idea. And so recording seems like it's so permanent, it feels so permanent, and we forget that recording really is just a snapshot.
Do you ever, have you had the experience that you've turned in what you thought might have not a performance that might not be to your liking, but you discover that audience members or friends that were in the audience are telling you knocked it out of the park?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this week is a perfect example of that. I've been fighting a sinus infection all week. And so I had a big gig on Wednesday. I had this wonderful gig last night at Bottle Brush. And the whole time I'm thinking, it sounds like, even now, I feel like I'm playing in a different room. I'm so congested that I feel like everything is really, really quiet and far away. But then on Wednesday after the show, people were like, I had no idea you were sick. If you hadn't mentioned it, it would have been fine. I wouldn't have even noticed.
it's funny. I think performers generally have the worst seat in the house when it comes right down to it. And you know everything. It's kind of kind of like being in the kitchen of a restaurant all the time.
Exactly.
You don't always want to be there. This is Ellen Cherry, fresh from her performance last night with Sue Gartland, who I'll bet was wonderful. Mm-hmm. She's a terrific songwriter and singer. We'll talk more with Ellen, but let's get another song in.
Sure.
What would you like to do next?
I'm going to do a song. What song am I going to do next? I'm going to do this song. It's a love song called, the first one I played was called 1933 to California, and it was inspired by a Dorothea Lange song, picture, My Grandmother. This is a song about love. It's called I Hope to Dream of You Tonight.
Ellen Cherry at the Saturday Light Brigade. I love the rhythm of that.
Thank you.
Song, which for a minute I thought it was 6/8, but it's 4/4.
It is. Right.
But
it's a trick.
But that's a radio song in some respects because it just has this great forward motion where the guitar almost seems ahead of the lyric mm-hmm. as you sing it. And it's well, everybody hears it differently, but it's neat because it just moves you through the story as you play. And it's not easy to achieve that all the time.
Well, thank you.
I'm curious. Before I forget, I know you live in Baltimore now, right?
Yep.
In Maryland. Were you raised there?
Nope. I was raised north of Dallas in Texas. And then I went to college in Arkansas. I lived in New Orleans for a bit. And then I landed in another port city, Baltimore, for the last 12 years, actually.
Well, look at you. And you're making me want to go back to Baltimore or the island. The Bertha's Muscle Island. Why can't I think of the name of it?
Kent Island or?
No.
Is it on the Eastern Shore?
No, it's near Baltimore. And it's maybe, Ricky, Fells Point is what
I'm Fells Point,
of.
Yeah.
It's not an island. It's not an island at all. Surprise.
That's
it's
why I was confused.
No, we heard a lot of good music there and enjoyed it. And Baltimore itself is great, too.
Baltimore is a really interesting place.
Fells Point was a lot of fun. I really should think about these things before I say them. But
nah, it's more fun this way.
What I was starting to ask you, and looking at that song and the story it tells and the pacing of it, this whole idea of Emmy nominated, how does that happen? How do you end up? Because I think you've had music on a number of TV programs. Are you tapped? Do you find people? And then just the whole notion, I don't think a lot of folks think about, where the music comes from. It just seems to be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how did this happen for you?
Well, that's an interesting idea because music used to be one of the converging points for people before television. People used to go out and see live music all the time, and this was a very social activity, especially live performance. And now music for a lot of people is sort of like wallpaper. It's just in the background, and it's something that we play in our cars or while we're washing dishes or doing other activities or working. And the idea of producing music for that kind of listening crowd it's a difficult thing because you want to capture somebody's attention. And you also want them to just sit and listen to your entire album and do nothing else. Like the whole point of like making an album is that you want someone to put headphones on, sit on their couch and listen to it on their stereo. And that is so rare now. But doing something like the Fox jingle it came to me just because I was in the community of songwriters.
I didn't know you did a Fox.
That's what the
jingle.
Emmy is.
Oh,
yeah.
I had no idea.
It was a jingle basically written for a Fox News promotional campaign.
Wow.
In Baltimore City. And they asked me to do it because I was a songwriter in the community and they wanted somebody who was in the community, in the arts community in Baltimore and had lived long enough in the city. I'm sure it would be, it would be been great if I was a native, but I'm a native now. I think of Baltimore as my hometown. But it was just a wonderful experience to have, first of all, to do a song for hire like that and to understand what it meant like to go from writing just from an emotional standpoint or my artistic creative direction for songwriting to actually understanding, okay, this is a job and this is the goal. The producer wants this one line. How do I fit this into a creative sounding song that doesn't sound too much like a jingle and is still sort of represents a little bit of what I do, but is also what the work for hire, the project was for. So it was an interesting experiment for me. And the great thing was that the campaign, which was supposed to run for 4 months, ran for 14 months, I think, because it was so popular and like people asked they wrote into the station, they loved the song and they wanted to keep it going. So that was really great. It was free advertising, so I didn't complain at all for the fact that they had this on the air, on television, a couple of times a day.
How cool to think of. And so this was the local Fox news coverage. I'm mostly distinguishing it from the national Fox news service.
No, absolutely.
Not so much due to success or prominence, but just you don't hear a lot of music on the national service. But in a local newscast, they do a lot for image building and trying to bring a community together.
I think that was definitely the goal.
Yeah. And stations do invest so much research and time and looking for talent. And that's a tremendous, I actually think it's more of an honor than being the sounder heard before Bill O'Reilly's latest show or something for a number of reasons. This is Ella Cherry, who we're talking to. So some of your work, if I remember reading your bio a few weeks ago, you've had some stuff on Oxygen too, is that right?
Actually, those placements were gratis, so I don't actually know. I know that like a lot of those, we don't have cable television, so I've never seen it on there. But what they do is they do a gratis placement. They license your music so that they can use it at any time if they want to. So they might use little 10-second clips or 15-second clips, but it wasn't necessarily featured on like a certain part of a show or something.
Well, that's really neat. This is apropos of nothing, but the guy, I don't have an iPhone. I'm an Android user. But talking about gratis placements, and the guy that does the voice for Siri or the navigational voice apparently did those tracks like 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
He was asked to record like the so many words necessary to do that. And he didn't really, you know, it's not like they told him they were going to use it and reveal it. And, you know, he realized, oh, that's...
He's like, that's my voice.
That's me. And there's a really good article about that. And the woman who played Zuzu in It's a Wonderful Life apparently never knew it was her until she was in her 40s.
Oh, wow.
Which is bizarre, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could be on an Oxygen program
and not even
and
know
not
it.
Know it is,
yes.
is the point I was spending way too much time
That's okay.
Making. You've got a lot of recordings. What's out there? How do people get a hold of what you've done?
Well, some people wait until they have actually like written all of their best songs and then record. Uh-huh. I prefer just like start recording right at the beginning so that you can see the true evolution of an artist from like the mid-90s to now. So I always tell anybody that if they're looking for old material, anything prior to 2004, as much as I love those recordings personally, they're really just coasters. They should just be used as coasters now for your drink. Anything post 2004, I really feel like I started to kind of come into my voice a little bit. But you can find them on my website in the store page. I think I have 4 or 5 albums up on iTunes, and I'm sure there's plenty of places you can find it. We did a radio push for the last album, which was called New Year's. So about 200 college and independent radio stations had that disc for the last year.
That's great. And it's ellencherry.com is the website, spelled just like you think it would be. Are most of your albums, are they pretty acoustic? Or
actually, it's interesting because I just played that song, The Hope to Dream, and we were talking about the pacing of it. And on a previous album from 2008, which was a rock and roll pop album, fully produced with a full band, drums, bass, I played all electric guitars, there's piano. It's much of a more full production kind of sounding album than the last one, which is New Year's and is more acoustic. But on that album, I put Hope to Dream, and it's a much slower, I mean, the song is like 6.5 minutes long or something, and it's very, very slow. And it's interesting to me because when I started playing it with my current guitar player, Michael Prout, we started picking up the pace a little bit to its current incantation or incarnation or whatever. And it evolved, it grew. It went from infancy to adolescence and adulthood, I guess, now, and it's more of a mature song. But it's interesting to me now I have two totally distinct recordings of it.
And as well it should. I mean, it's a human product, so it's going to evolve and change over time. hopefully. It should. This is Ellen Cherry. It's 20 before noon. Probably after the next song or maybe the one after that, I want to talk with Dennis a little bit about last night's show and what's coming up in the months ahead. And I also want to learn more about what's coming up in Ellen's future. But first, we should hear another song. What would you like to play?
I'm going to play a song called 1983, A Secret.
So we've gone 50 years now.
Yes, we've gone from
1933
to 1983, and the one that I just played was 2003.
Yeah,
I'll explain the years in a minute.
Yeah, they're all threes. I liked 1983.
I never really noticed that. Interesting. All right, here we go. Thank you. open window, I can see.
Ellen Cherry at the Saturday Light Brigade. I'm curious about how old that song is. Sorry about that. I caught you just as you were drinking some water. Is it pretty? And now, see that I'm getting. my throat is sympathetically.
It's the winter weather, man.
It's dry in here too. is that a recent song?
I wrote the song. Yikes, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But the reason that it's titled 1983 is in 2005, I wrote a women's history album called Years, And I was really stuck. I couldn't, I was trying to just look for inspiration. And as a history major in college and a lover of history, I thought, I'll just do these sort of historical, fictional narratives of these women and find specific women, do some research on them, and then fictionalize it. And I wrote 6 songs, and we put them on this album Years, and I put it out. And it actually had a really good response. People really responded to the idea of each track having a year associated with it in a story.
Yeah.
And then I started playing with my friend Mike Prout, and we added these other 6 songs to it, and I wanted to re-record and do new arrangements of them. And he's like, we should call it New Years. So it became the New Year's album. And that's the album that I put out 2 years ago. But I had all these other songs that really were sort of more personal and intimate and more about my life and not necessarily about history, but I still wanted to label them with the years. So 1983 was the year I sort of discovered the secret love, basically. So that's why it's called 1983.
I'm glad you shared that with us. Not everybody would do that. So thank you. And it sounds like a great album, too. I want to turn to Dennis quickly, if I can. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
How did you find her?
Through Tony Denikis. You remember Tony?
I do.
And she did some backup work for him on a couple of his CDs or songs and recommended her. I went out, listened to her online, because we vet it pretty carefully to see who's going to fit with the venue. I listened to her, and it was a no-brainer. She was a pick right away.
Yeah, Dennis is somebody who I just trust implicitly and explicitly. All the plicities, duplicity.
Duplicity.
I start to really enjoy.
Complicity.
Yeah, complicity. All right, call us if you can think
Simplicity.
Of a plicity. I'll tell you, the wind has not been getting to me at all.
Yeah, don't start me, Larry.
But Dennis is just his taste in booking for Bottle Brush Gallery and Shop has been tremendous. And if you're wondering what this is all about, typically on Friday nights, he's been bringing in great folks to Bottle Brush in the aptly named town of Harmony, Pennsylvania, in Butler County, which is just it's what, maybe a 20-minute drive north of Pittsburgh at most. 539 Main Street is the location. It's open 7 days a week with art to look at, but there, you've got a lot of great music coming up too, and hopefully we'll be doing some things juxtaposed. I know March 16th, Plowshare Poets coming up.
Celtic band coming in. There'll be large pipes and small pipes and whistles and borons and bazookies, the whole thing. They're bringing a 4-piece band, but Sean McIntyre is opening for them, and he's a cappello and does traditional Celtic music. So we're going to be celebrating the holiday the night before.
And then in April, Todd Burge.
Who's going to start off at 6 o'clock with the Odd Urge Crazy Kazoo Kids Camp. We're hoping to get some kids down because Todd is fantastic with children, as you well know.
Yeah.
You've had him here a number of times. He's going to do a kazoo camp and then break into a concert, and the Lonesome No More Band will open for him.
And that's April 6th. And then looking ahead to May from North Carolina, Malcolm Holcomb, who sounds, folk blues, and Rick Malice. We were talking about Rick very early this morning. After playing one of his old songs, Rick will be up. And then coming up, in the summertime, you've got a full schedule already.
We do.
It's great.
We're booked through September.
The Allegheny Drifters, the Carpenter Ants, Tony Denikis once again, and then Eric Brace and Peter Cooper of Last Train. The thing to do is to go to bottlebrushgallery.com, check out the website. You also, I'm sure, can get to their Facebook page. It's just
Bottle Brush Gallery and Shop on Facebook,
okay.
And then Harmony in the House is the venue for the music, and we promoted the shows there. I want to tell you before you move back to her. Last night, the sound engineer that we use up at Mud Hut Studios came to me, and he says, "You know, Dennis, you always surround yourself with good music, but every once in a while, you get somebody that bumps it up to the next level."
Huh.
And he said, "And Ellen Cherry bumped it up to the next level." He was very impressed.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice. surprise.
It was a packed house. Almost nobody left. And, you know, and what I mean that by that is some people had to go. There were reasons they had to go. But she had the full audience attention right to the very last minute. And it was a fantastic show. We were all just totally impressed with her music, with her stage presence, with her connection to the people. It was a fantastic night.
Well, and it's great you're providing a venue for this. And we were talking earlier, Alan was mentioning, you know, folks used to get together to listen to music, and that's how you entertained yourself. And I think it's, you know, it's partly technology that's changed that, but it also very much is the pace of life. And you were mentioning some people had to get up and leave and do other things. Ricky and I went out. We rarely go out to hear live music, but we went out to hear a friend last Saturday night, and we were really glad it started at 7, mm-hmm. so we could be home by 9:15, mm-hmm. you know. And it gets harder to do that, but it's really a transformational experience when you do. It's good to connect with a living, breathing, bleeding human being. Blood.
We don't want a lot of blood.
We don't want people bleeding, but every now and then, if I can't get people quieted down for something I'm emceeing, I'll remind them of that. And they seem to be really taken aback. It's like, this is a person, you know. Yeah. This is live. You can't pause this. Yeah. We have time for one more. It's been so great to have you here. I hope you'll come back. I don't recall your being in the Pittsburgh area before. I don't know if you have been.
I have. It's been a couple of years. I played with a great piano player here maybe 2 years ago, Joy Ike.
Oh, sure. Yeah
she's Joy, amazing.
Joy's awesome. Yeah, and she's been sitting right where you are many times.
She's incredible, and I hope to play with her again. We just, like, both of us being working artists, it's, you know, two ships.
You
basically.
Two would sing really well together.
Yeah. So we played a show a couple of years ago, and I don't even remember the name of the venue, but I remember it sounding sort of Middle Eastern or something. It was like,
I know where you played.
Istanbul or something like that.
You played, I'll bet, at the Gypsy Cafe
maybe
at Istanbul. But I hope we'll see more of you.
I hope so too. But the most important thing people need to know is that they need to check out next month at Bottle Brush Gallery. That's when they need to go, right?
Yeah.
Continue to support that, because that's one of the reasons why people like me can continue to do this, is to go to those venues.
And thank you very much for being here. And thanks to Andy Collier for a great mix. And what would you like to finish up with?
Let's do a song about finding love on the last night on Earth.
Oh.
Yes. That's always a good way to end the show, right? Or end my performance.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Thanks, Alan.
This is a song I wrote when I lived in New Orleans, and it was the end of I'm going to mess it up. It was 1999. What was that, the last millennium? And this is a song about basically what is your priority? And my priority is to find love, at least for the last moments before we all get sucked into the vortex.
You need Y2K compliant love, too.
Yes, exactly. That's what this was. Luckily for me, it turned out to be Y2K compliant. Thanks for having me. These dreams are to worry, sweat, or tears. I've had time enough, all those wasted years. No time for silly things, my body or my soul. Some cosmic vortex will swallow me whole. Still, I'd give the world and all its earthly charms.
Alan Cherry, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
What a great performance. I wish we could just keep going. Thank you to Dennis McCurdy also. Dennis, thanks so much for making this happen.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here again.
And thanks to Andy Collier for a great mix. And thanks to Ricky Berger for doing all that executive producing that she did. And thanks to our whole team. And we did our best to try to acknowledge you if you called or emailed or used Facebook or instant input or all of those other ways we seem to keep in touch. If we missed your name or your request, we apologize if it's your style to listen without actively participating. That's fine. Lots of people do. Insert your name right here. You're a big part of the Saturday Light Brigade. Look for us again next Saturday. Right here at the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings from Public Radio, on Public Radio, and slbradio.org. Google Talent.